Hello, and welcome to Judgewitical, a new podcast from the young, hip, and lay editors of America Media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news. This week, over drinks.
What?
So exciting. I returned at the perfect time.
Welcome back.
Wait, but it's still Lent.
Yeah, well.
Last week you told me you couldn't drink during Lent.
I know, but what's Friday?
St. Patty's.
Yeah, so.
Which is when our listeners will be
hearing this.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
So, in solidarity with our listeners, or some of our listeners, we are enjoying a cold Guinness over this recording. Thanks to our Jesuit overlord and the best boss of all time, Matt Malone, SJ, who sent us a special dispensation letter before this recording, in which he wrote, "I hereby dispense you individually from the obligation to abstain from alcohol for the episode of quote-unquote Jesuitical that will air on or around the 17th of March, 2017, the memorial of St. Patrick, of happy and glorious memory, longtime patron of our beloved Archdiocese." So, cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks, Matt.
I'm Ashley McKinless, and I'm joined by Zach Davis.
Hey, everyone.
And back from Tokyo is Olga Segura.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back.
Thank you. We missed you. I missed you guys. It was hard to listen to episodes and be like, oh, I miss you guys, you know?
But how was your Asian tour?
It was great. It was pretty fantastic. I'm dealing with some jet lag right now, but it was great. It's nice to get away from New York City and realize that New Yorkers are not the center of the world, so it was cool.
Yeah.
All right. Later in the show, we're going to be talking to Father Patty Gilger about March Madness and whether Catholics should be watching sports. No.
Watching corporate schools take advantage of the unwaged labor of athletes.
Yes. But first, it's time for Signs of the Times, the part of our show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week so you don't have to.
Yeah, so we're not the only ones who got a dispensation for St. Patrick's Day.
So this one doesn't really apply to me because I'm a vegetarian, but in 80 dioceses across the nation, the bishops have offered dispensations so that people can eat corned beef in honor of St. Patrick's Day. So will you guys be eating corned beef on Friday?
No, I don't typically eat corned beef, but it's sort of like one of those things, well, since I can, I probably will.
Yeah, I don't either, but now I want to.
Yeah, I don't know if that violates the spirit of the dispensation, but...
Yeah, there are like a lot of technical rules around this thing. So in some places, if you eat the corned beef on Friday, then you can't eat beef on Saturday. And there's also a question of if your bishop didn't give a dispensation, if you can like drive to the next diocese over and eat corned beef there.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
You know, there is this really great letter that floats around every year around Lent. Someone rightly asks, does alligator count as, you know, like fish, so it's okay to eat? Or is it like normal meat, so it's off limits? And Archbishop Gregory M. Amond of the New Orleans Archdiocese clarified that alligator is a magnificent creature that is important to the state of Louisiana, which is also considered
seafood. So we should eat them.
Seafood.
They're so important. Let's eat them during Lent.
So alligator's good all Fridays. Yeah. Corned beef, only on St. Patrick's Day.
Also, in Ireland, they don't actually eat corned beef on St. Patrick's Day. According to my sources, they usually have lamb or bacon.
Oh, so we're not even...
They also don't really celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Many people are saying this.
All right, Zach, what's our next story?
So this Monday was the anniversary of Pope Francis being elected as Pope Francis. So it's crazy to think 4 years has gone by. Do you guys remember where you were?
I do. I was at work. I was working at George Washington University at the time, and it came on, and I just stopped working.
Yeah.
Watched, and soon thereafter, that's when I signed up for Twitter, because I was like, oh, I got to follow this guy.
Okay, you were here, right?
Yeah, I was at our old building, and everyone on the editorial staff gathered upstairs, or where, like, the Jesuits were living. And we just watched for, I think,
that
like,
must have been wild. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
When did people realize that it was the first Jesuit pope?
I think immediately, because it was a room. There was a room full of Jesuits, so it was pretty immediate. But it was interesting because it was the first time I had been up to that part of the Jesuit community, and mm-hmm. just to kind of awkwardly sit there for this great moment was fun.
So yeah, it's been 4 years since we've had Pope Francis, and
lots of memorable moments.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the most recent memorable moments was this interview that he gave to this German magazine, where he talked about the big news was he sort of signaled this openness to letting priests get married. But also within that, something that I found like really, really nice is that he, you know, was really frank about in his own life having moments of spiritual darkness. So if you, I mean, I know I've experienced this where times where like your prayer life is super dry, you're not really feeling it. And it's just like really comforting to know that the Pope also has been there. So 4 more years, 4 more years.
Last week, the House Republicans made good on their campaign promise to introduce a repeal of the Affordable Care Act. And what they have now is the American Health Care Act, which was heralded as a act of mercy by House Speaker Paul Ryan, because it gives people more choice in choosing their health insurance.
It's the first thing on my mind when I break my leg is... do I have enough choices about where to get this fixed?
Yes. So he called it an act of mercy. Representative Joe Kennedy III gave a pretty pointed rebuke to his fellow Catholic in Congress, calling it an act of malice, not an act of mercy. Kennedy said, "I was struck last night by a comment that I heard made by Speaker Ryan, where he called this repeal bill an act of mercy. With all due respect to our speaker, he and I must have read different scripture. The one I read calls on us to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to shelter the homeless, and to comfort the sick." So
comfort them with boom. Options for access.
Options for access. Yeah. So, I mean, since the House Republicans introduced the bill, the Congressional Budget Office has said that within 10 years, 24 million less people will have health insurance because of this. And I know I've gained a reputation around this office as a defender of Paul Ryan, just because I, you know, think he has good intentions much of the time. But this is pretty much indefensible. Even people in his own party aren't defending this bill.
No, so. It's tough to stand up for making a 65-year-old person with $25,000 of income pay $15,000 for healthcare.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they could choose not to.
They could. Yeah. They could choose to drop their coverage. That is true.
Alrighty, what's next, Olga?
Okay, so according to those who work in exorcism ministry, there's a rise in demonic activity.
What? Told you guys. If this is your first time listening, you have to go back to our last episode where we've already gone over this. Don't talk to demons. Don't try to get them to mess with Donald Trump. Don't try to get them to mess with your ex. Don't try to get them to mess with your bully. It's a bad idea. Don't do it. Don't talk to demons.
Well, Father Vincent Lampert apparently agrees with you, because he says that the problem isn't that the devil has upped his game, but more people are willing to play it. Where there is demonic activity, there is always an entry point.
Yep. So
dang.
When you're at your friend's house and someone pulls out a Ouija board, break it in half.
A Ouija board told me that I was going to go to UVA. Back in middle school, when I was like, I'm definitely not going to UVA because that's where my dad went, but it knew.
You know what? I kind of have to agree with Zach here. If you mess with Ouija boards and things like that, you're kind of asking for things to come into your space. And it's just, my mother never allowed them into the house because she's very Dominican Catholic. And her idea was, her belief was always that you are inviting the devil in if you play these games. So I'm terrified of Ouija boards and everything.
Yep. I take no pleasure in being vindicated.
So I don't really want to become the follow in Eloise's footsteps and become the resident defender of witches. So I'm going to just let you guys call a W on this one.
Great. Thank you. Advancing to the next round.
But shout out to Eloise, though. Defender of witches.
Eloise, don't worry. We're going to have you back sometime soon so that Zach doesn't have the last word on this. And so you can demonstrate all of your diverse interests besides witches. And now we're joined by Father Paddy Gilger. He's the culture editor here at America, and he's also pursuing a PhD in sociology at the New School in New York. So, Paddy, I have purposefully put off filling out my bracket so I can just copy yours.
Sounds great.
So, let's start with who you have going all the way this year.
Well, I'm a big Big East supporter. I'm a big, like, support the conference that your team is in. So, right. Creighton University has been my team since I went to college there. So, I'm going to support them.
And Creighton, you know, the most east of teams.
You know, there are a lot of old and tired jokes about the location of the Big East. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm not tired of them.
Now, Villanova, I think I think they're the best team in basketball. I also think they have one of the toughest roads to get there, but I'm going to pick them anyway.
You know, there's a Jesuit school that's a number one seed in this tournament.
It's true.
You're not going with the Zags?
No, I have them in the Final Four, but I have them losing to Villanova in the Final Four.
Gross. Okay. Yeah. Augustinians over the Jesuits.
Yeah, Augustinians over Big East over Jesuit even in the end there. Maybe that's a little inappropriate.
So, we thought maybe we could just start by you recapping the top moments in Jesuit NCAA history.
I would love to. Now, look, we have a long tradition of basketball, and there are probably 25, 50 moments that I really should have listed here, but I'm just going to go with five, and I'm going to try to do them quickly. But please interrupt me so that we can argue about these or whatever.
Yeah.
Let's do them in reverse order because it's always better to build towards anticipation. Number five, USF and Bill Russell, maybe the best basketball player of all time, probably number two, going back-to-back titles, NCAA titles in 55 and 56. Also very cool because USF was one of the first schools to have black and white players playing on the same teams, as Loyola Chicago did at their title later on in 63. So number five there. Number four, this is a great story. Marquette's on here a couple of times. I'm a Midwest Jesuit. Marquette, famous coach Al McGuire, is the last coach in 1970 to decline an NCAA invitation. He said no to them in 1970 and went to the NIT.
Wait, why?
So this is why, because they were the number eight ranked team in the country at that point, and they got a really bad regional location, and McGuire was tough as nails. He was like, he said, you're not going to give us a good location? I'm going to the NIT. And the president of the university, famous Jesuit president in our province, Father Rayner, called Al McGuire and said, Al, are you really sure you want to say no to this? This is the bigger deal. And Father, and the response was a classic response, Al McGuire, to Father Rayner. He said, Father, I don't hear confessions. You don't coach this team. We're going to the NIT.
Did they at least win the NIT?
They did. They won the NIT.
Jeez.
It was great.
Okay.
So, you know, a long time ago. But that's an all-time moment. Number three, the classic Georgetown going to the title game 3 years in a row. Patrick Ewing, yeah. Alonzo Mourning, Dikembe Mutombo, winning it in 84. Awesome. Number two, Marquette again, their 77 championship. A wonderful story there, again with Al McGuire. This was his final game he ever coached as a college basketball coach. His line after winning, and he's sitting on the bench crying. And this guy's a tough-as-nails guy, sitting on the bench crying. And they go to interview him after the game, and he's like, street fighters like me don't usually end up in lace. It was like, what a great line,
that's fantastic.
And then number one all-time, this is easily a number one. I will not accept any arguments about it.
I knew this one was coming.
Creighton hitting 21 threes in a single game, including 9 in a row against number 4 ranked Villanova in 2014. Doug McDermott, Ethan Rogge, incredible win in that game, rolling over them in Villanova. Great game.
Where were you for that game?
I was watching that game at home in Omaha when I was working for Creighton at the time. Just been ordained, back at the school, having a wonderful time watching this. I get a text from all my family members who are season ticket holders to this, and they're saying, are you watching this game right now? It's amazing. Like, oh yes.
Oh, man. So I'm really offended that you left off. You mentioned it, but it's not on the list. The 1963 championship by Loyola Chicago.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. The only school in Illinois with a title,
also
which is
true.
Remarkable.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. No University of Illinois. No DePaul.
No. And there is a lot of great things that happened, as you mentioned, with racial integration on that team.
Yeah.
Mississippi State was forbidden to play Loyola Chicago.
True.
Because they had 4 black starters.
Yes.
And so the team literally had to sneak out of the state, basically, to go play Loyola.
So why are you a Loyola fan again?
Well, not only am I an alum of Loyola Chicago, but I have a special connection to the team as their former philosophy tutor.
That's right. I forgot you were the philosophy tutor.
Yep. So I've taught Kant and Derrida to Loyola Chicago's basketball team before.
Incredible, yeah. Yep. The difference between a good team and a bad team.
Right, the difference. Oh, God, that's that next level. Can sports, from a Jesuit angle, are sports becoming an ideology or a religion or maybe a golden calf in this country?
I mean, look, I'm a big sports fan, and I'm going to say yes to that. There, maybe some self-reflection. I need to do a little examine, consolations and desolations, as you guys will do later. But I notice in myself, like, if there's a big football game. Okay, look, no, here's a very practical example. I had literally signed up to say Mass for my community this Friday afternoon. Now, guess who's playing the NCAA tournament Friday afternoon? Creighton University. Yeah. I went and erased my name on the board. I said, sorry, dudes, I'm not saying Mass during that time. I will not be in the chapel. I will be in the TV room. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely there's a competition for priorities there. It's not all bad, though. It's not all bad, though. And this is the thing, is that we want to say two things about it. The first is this, that one of the reasons liturgies are important is because they gather communities around certain sets of ideals. And what's the ideal that a Roman Catholic liturgy ought to gather people around is we want to become a community of self-sacrificing love. Mm-hmm. What sports can gather people around is not necessarily as healthy as that ought to be, as a liturgy ought to be. That doesn't mean it's bad. And especially from our perspective, like an Ignatian perspective, a Jesuit perspective, we really believe that God is always already active before we show up on the scene. And that means he's always already active in sports and in the communities that are built there. And then, you know, look, in the constitutions, Ignatius uses the phrase, encourages Jesuits, encourages and our colleagues, Ignatian colleagues, to have holy rivalries that encourage us to competition towards holiness. Sports can definitely do that, and communities of sports can definitely do that.
I know at least a few of us around this table are competitive. I don't know how often those competitions are holy necessarily, but...
Yeah. Well, so Pope Francis backs me up. He gave a speech to a Italian sports club last year, and he said... Sports are good. They give dignity to people, but it's important to give equal dignity to all sports. Yeah. In his context, he's talking about people being obsessed with soccer to the disadvantage of all other sports.
True.
Yeah. So let's talk about soccer. No, I'm just kidding. I do play soccer, though.
But yeah, no, I like what you were saying about community, Patty. I went to Fordham, and I had friends who were on the football team. Yeah. And one of the things that they loved the most was that they were able to play with these guys that, you know, they had gone to high school with. And
That's
they got to continue sort of building this home on campus in a world where, like, they knew no one, but they had these teammates.
I don't like to share this too often, but I was a collegiate athlete. I was on the school Quidditch team. And I would...
That's a real sport. Don't laugh, man. Just kidding.
Well, people would say, like, oh, isn't that a made-up sport? And I would always respond, all sports are made-up.
Social constructivism on the radio, yep. On podcasting.
But yeah, would have loved to see anyone, friends or otherwise, show up to any of those games.
Okay, can we go back to my bracket, though?
Sure.
Patty, is there a particularly Ignatian way to fill out a bracket?
You know, I wish I could say yes, but I'm not sure there
How
really
much
is.
Discernment wait, goes yeah. into
Well, I mean, copying a Jesuit priest's bracket is pretty Ignatian, so that's how I'll do that.
See, I used to copy Obama's just because he seemed like he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
But Trump refused to fill his bracket out on television this year,
what?
So I won't be able to copy the president.
You know, I saw actually Steph Curry from the Warriors filled out his bracket online today, and I was really pumped because he had Creighton going to the Sweet 16. It's like, all right, so many experts picking against Creighton in the first round. No, Sweet 16.
Yeah. Oh, what's the – I've got a Jesuit matchup in the Sweet 16. What is it? It's Xavier and hang on, I tweeted about it. Sorry. I forget who they play. Yeah, Gonzaga Xavier in the Sweet 16. For the Elite Eight, yeah. So I've got an Elite Eight Jesuit matchup. I'm calling it here.
So how do you decide between the two? How would you decide between the two?
I would definitely decide for Gonzaga because they're way better at basketball this year.
I don't... Sorry. Father Eric Sundrup is making an X and then a box.
XU? He's a Xavier
what is
grad.
That?
That's right. Oh, okay.
I thought you were
Xavier.
Throwing up the Bronx sign for a second. But okay. Good to know.
Eric and I have been friends for a long time, yeah. And so the Creighton Xavier games have turned into, you know, friendly quote rivalries.
Yeah. What about betting on tournament games? Is that cool for Jesuits?
I'm totally in support of that as long as it doesn't get out of hand. Like, okay. Yes, I will put money on a bracket this year, but like, you know, $20, like something like that.
within the realms of poverty, of course.
That's right. The money I'm not spending on a scotch, I will spend on.
So is there an Ignatian way to fill out a bracket?
I mean, in some ways, yes, but in some ways, I would really say there's a difference between making a decision and doing a discernment. And to do a discernment, you really have to be making a communal or an individual decision between two goods about your own state in life or course in life.
So Gonzaga Xavier does not count as, you know, two goods?
It's obvious that Gonzaga is the better good. So no, I'm just kidding. No, it's just that this does not influence our state in life, you know, yeah. So it doesn't lead us closer to God or further away from God and those kinds of things.
Now, if you're deciding whether to go to Gonzaga or Xavier.
Exactly right. That would be something to definitely do to discernment about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So we like to ask all of our guests, we forgot last week, but we're bringing it back this week. If you could canonize one person, if you were given that power, living or dead?
Dorothy Day.
Dorothy Day?
Yeah, Dorothy Day, without question. I try to go over to the Catholic Worker every week. The Catholic Worker, an organization that she and Peter Maurin founded a number of years ago. They're houses of hospitality that serve the poor and work for justice around the country, based in Catholic social teaching. I go over there to say Mass, and I go over there to serve the homeless pretty regularly, as often as I can, not as often as I should. And it's incredible to be there with them and to still see the way some of the people there knew Dorothy and talk about her. And remember what she was like and share stories about her. And this is the thing, is that, you know, she was very clear that she didn't want to be dismissed as a saint because she didn't want people to be able to say this was impossible. And it's not. It's possible for all of us. But the reason it's so hard is because it costs. Like, you know, what's going to happen if you decide to follow this path is that you're going to have to stop doing some stuff that you want to be doing. You have to start doing some stuff that you're not sure you're going to love doing. And it's going to cost. But it's worth it. Like, this stuff is worth it. Leon Bloy was right, that's the only tragedy in life, to not be a saint.
Amen.
Thanks, Patty.
Thank you, Patty. Thanks for joining us and for being our expert on all things March Madness.
I feel so pigeonholed in that, but thank you.
Okay. Now it's time for some listener feedback. Our first email comes from Peter Gilbert, and he writes, I discovered you from the endorsement of one of my favorite podcasts, Unorthodox. Ours too, Peter. As someone who's raised Catholic and is working on eventually converting to Judaism, scandalous, I know. It's not that scandalous. With my mother and brother being Catholic, I feel that this keeps me in the community and up to date with aspects of the world more relevant to the rest of my family, even if they are not wholly relevant to me.
Thanks. Thanks, Peter, for writing in. And thanks for listening.
Yeah. Glad we can keep you relevant.
And yeah, let us.
I'm glad you think we're relevant.
I'm always struggling to be relevant with my sister and mother, too. So I can understand that. Our next letter comes from Stan Levinson, who writes, I've long been fascinated by various peoples and trends within the church, having spent most of my adult working life with Latinos, especially Mexicans, and having forgotten, but read, tons of literature in Spanish. Being of a rather ecumenical bent spiritually, Stan finds himself fascinated by figures like Meister Eckhart, Thomas Merton, Thomas Keating, Jim Finley, and, of course, Pope Francis. So I am interested in, so he goes on to say,
I think he knows about Catholicism than I do.
Yeah,
probably. He listed a few names that I had to Google. Yeah.
So he goes on to say, I am interested in seeing and hearing what young spiritually oriented Catholics have to say these days. Well, we hope we can continue to provide that for you, Stan.
Yes, yeah. You've come to the right place.
All right, should we move into consolations and desolations?
Sure.
Olga.
So my consolation and desolation this week are kind of the same thing. So as you guys have mentioned, and since I was missing in action for recent episodes, I was traveling for a few weeks. And it's always exciting because, you know, I get to break out of the New York bubble. I'm very much that typical New Yorker who thinks the rest of the world looks like where I'm from. And then you step outside of that and you realize it doesn't, you know. But it's also very difficult to try to balance actually being away from the office and trying to maintain this sort of work-life balance while you're gone, you know? And it's something that I have not mastered yet. Because it's not like I'm choosing one evil over one good, you know? Like, these are two very important parts of my life, and I have to make a real conscious effort to kind of be like, you know, you need this time to be away, but you also want to be with your co-host, and you want to be a part of this, you know? So it was something that was very kind of overwhelming while I was gone.
And we missed you.
Yeah, we're glad to have you back.
Yeah, I miss you guys too.
Yeah.
I only cried once while I was gone. Just kidding. But not really.
All right, let's hear it, Zach.
Yeah, so the Northeast was pummeled with a snowstorm this week. And there are a lot of feelings and emotions that get evoked around a snow day. And so, you know, we had a work from home day. But the reason this was a consoling part of my week was that my sister's actually in town, and my roommate got the day off, and so we were able to sort of like channel that snow day feel from childhood,
that's the best.
and sort of all set up on the table and work together. And I love coming to work here, and I love my coworkers here, and we have a good time. But it was nice to like spend the day being productive with them, and I was super thankful to be in a place where, you know, our employees' safety was, you know, paramount to all being in the same building.
Right.
Like, I texted one of my roommates and it's like, oh, subways are closing at 4 a.m. for above ground stops. And he just responded, my boss doesn't believe me. So he had to like walk to the closest underground station, which was like 30 minutes away to make it to the work that day. So I was also thankful for that.
Thanks, OSHA.
Yes. Ashley, how about you?
So my consolation this week is I went home to Virginia. It was for my grandpa's 90th birthday, which is a consolation in itself, but
happy birthday.
Like Olga choosing between two goods. I had two goods this weekend to choose between. And on Sunday, So on Sunday, I spent time with the kids of the refugee family that my parents took in. Hasib and Lema are 5 and 7, and they had never been to a American movie theater. So me and my sister and brother took them to see the latest Lego movie.
Oh, is it awesome?
It's so awesome.
This is too cute.
I need to see that too.
And I mean, besides the movie being awesome, it was really good for me to just see them be so excited about this thing I've done a million times. And it was, you know, just to like get them popcorn and candy and Coke and see them enjoying it was really wonderful. We got there for the previews, and at the end of the previews, Lema, the 5-year-old girl, was like, okay, so is it over? And we're like, no, it hasn't started yet.
Yeah, gotta love them previews.
So that was just a really beautiful, great experience. So my desolation is kind of weird and meta.
Yeah.
But so for the show, we came up with the concept of consolations and desolations, where you look back and see where you found God and where you didn't. And I find it really hard to do this. It's really about prayer. So what I'm saying is I'm finding it hard to pray in this way.
I sort of found myself having a lot of empathy for every priest I've ever known who gave a bad homily that focused on like their personal anecdote and never made it larger than that, mm-hmm. right? A lot of times they shade into like, here's what made me happy this week. Here's what made me sad this week. Right.
Yeah. Right.
Ignatius had something different in mind, I think. Or at least we've been told. So
so stay tuned. We hope to be getting better at this.
And hopefully, like, hopefully the listeners themselves can, like, try to model this too. So we're excited to go on this journey with you.
Yeah. And if you already know how to do this, please email us and give us some tips.
Yeah, let us
tell
know.
Tell us where you found God this week or didn't, you know. All right. Jesuitical is brought to you by America Media and produced by Wyatt Massey. Our editor is Noah Levinson. Jesuit Formation is provided by Eric Sundrup SJ. Adult Supervision provided by Carrie Weber. Our logo is by Sean Tripoli.
Beer by Guinness.
You can follow us on Twitter at Jesuitical Show and send us your questions, feedback, cocktail recipes, which will become relevant again in, 3 weeks?
Whenever Christ is risen.
And tell us where you found God this week at jesuitical@americamedia.org.
Also, please subscribe on iTunes.
Yes.
And please leave us a review.
Yeah, it's really important. It is how people find podcasts, and the algorithm gods really only care about whether you have stars and reviews.
Yes, so. And I am super vain.
If for nothing else than Zach Siegel, please subscribe,
please,
follow us.
Also, tell your friends.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, until next week, I'm Ashley McKinless with Zach Davis and Olga Segura with American Media. Thanks for listening. Bye.